From the West Australian, I'm Ben O'Shea, and this is The West Live.
The West Live.
The West Live
with Ben O'Shea.
To the surprise of exactly zero people, China has cracked the shits over our nuclear submarine deal with the US and the UK. If you're struggling to understand why Beijing is so angry about this, let me use my mate Mike as an analogy. So Mike was one of the lucky few Perth punters yesterday to score general public tickets to the AFL Grand Final. More than 100,000 West Aussies logged onto the Ticketmaster website in the hopes of securing a seat at this once-in-a-lifetime footy experience. The vast majority missed out, but by a stroke of luck, my mate Mike was able to buy four tickets. Now all he has to do is figure out who to give the other three to. Now, I've always thought Mike was a prince among men, not to mention handsome, so handsome, and just generally a great bloke. Okay, so sucking up probably isn't going to convince him to give me a ticket, and that's fair enough, because just like the game is a once-in-a-lifetime event, Mike has a once-in-a-lifetime amount of social capital. Over the next week, he could run his own reality show that was a cross between The Bachelor and SAS Australia to determine which of his friends get a ticket, and unlike Manu, they'd all go along with it. So how does this relate to nuclear subs? Well, let's fast forward to the grand final, when Mike is sitting pretty in his seat at Optus Stadium with his three chosen mates. In this analogy, Mike is Joe Biden, and the GF tickets are America's highly prized nuclear sub technology, which has given the US a massive strategic advantage. Now, his mates at the footy are Australia, who are so grateful to him for the tickets, they'll make sure he doesn't buy a beer all game. Mike, you want another single fin? Consider it done. What about a pie? I'll grab you one of those too. You just sit and enjoy the game, buddy. We'll get it for you. Now, you're kidding yourself if you don't think it'll be exactly the same with America and these subs, except instead of standing in a queue for a frothy, returning the favour to the US will involve little jaunts to the South China Sea, and Beijing knows it, not least because they've seen it firsthand with their Belt and Road Initiative. That program is basically a multi-trillion dollar guilt trip that has 50 developing countries in China's debt, so they know a thing or two about superpowers calling in favours from lesser nations. Of course, maybe things won't turn out like this, and President Biden will prove to be like Mike, a top bloke who doesn't hold things over his mates. Coming up on the show, we've got an all-star lineup. Woosha joins us to talk about the GF. Tony Gallardi joins us to talk about his iconic brows. And it's Friday, so Jeff Parry will join us to talk politics. But first, let's see what's making news.
The West Live.
Making news.
Joining me now in the studio is Sunrise correspondent Matt Tinney. G'day, mate.
Mate, happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you.
We've made it. What a week.
I know. And even though the weather is a bit miserable, I'm still so happy it's Friday. Bring it on. Bring on the weekend.
Bring it on. It'll be a wet weekend. Let's hope it all gets out of the system before grand final week. It's looking sunny for next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, then a little bit of rain Thursday. I'm hoping it's just one of those sort of quick sprinkles and then sunny again for the grand final.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And not like the previous 3 months of misery. No, we don't want that. And so let's talk about the grand final. How quickly do those tickets sell out?
9 minutes. Bang. Gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I reckon they would have gone even quicker.
Fast and the Furious.
If the Ticketmaster system had been capable of moving quicker.
Well, they were saying it was some sort of Australian record, 180,000 people in the queue for 10,000 tickets. And Gil McLachlan was saying a world record even.
Well, and when you think about it, each one of those people of how many, did you say 180,000? Mm. So each one of those 180,000 probably wasn't just on to buy one ticket.
They might have wanted four.
Yeah, two or four. So you could be talking about a potentially, you know, sort of 500,000 to 750,000 ticket demand.
So basically needing 10 Optus stadiums.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Which is just absolutely crazy. But I've also seen suggestions not surprising.
It should have been kind of a best of five series. Well, look, if we get a draw.
I like it. Or it's like, exactly. Or like in a Grand Slam tennis thing. So you have like the first round you know, you get a pass through to the second round.
Yes.
And then you get a pass through to the third round.
Love it.
The quarterfinals. And so you just whittle down. So it really narrows down the people who really want it the most.
You would have to think that this would give the AFL confidence for future opportunities for Perth.
Absolutely.
Bring it to Perth.
Absolutely.
It'll sell out. We go to everything.
Well, as I
just... nothing comes here. So when it does, we make the most of it.
Well, as I just said at the top of the show, like my mate was able to score tickets. Like he was very lucky. It was his birthday as well yesterday. And so he's logged on. From my understanding, he's logged on his laptop. He's logged on with his phone. And the laptop has said, you know, you're 75,000th in the queue. So he's like, that's not looking good.
I'm out.
And then on his phone, it said, you are 2,000th in the queue. And there was only there was 10,000 tickets. So he's like, hang on a minute.
I've got it. And he got them.
He got them.
Well, I've heard stories of people who were further in front of him, and then it said, oops, something went wrong.
Your request is timed out.
Yeah.
Or you get the wheel of death or something like that. Oh, it's so, it would have been so
brutal.
Stressful for people. Oof. But how fun, though.
Do you reckon? It's going to be so much fun.
Everyone will remember where they were when the GF tickets
when the tickets went on sale. Yeah, it's one of those things. Princess Diana, September 11, when the tickets went on sale. There's still a few ways you can get tickets, though. There's the golden ticket competition in the West Australian. That's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory style competition between now and Wednesday. I think it is. There's going to be some golden tickets in there.
Which one of us is Willy Wonka in this scenario?
Rick? Is Rick Willy Wonka? Is he going to hand out the... He'll hand out the family passes, surely.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that how this works?
Yeah, I think so.
Then I'm probably Veruca in all of this. Then there's another competition, 7 News. You need a code word. So we have a competition running there. Then if all else fails, you don't win the competitions, you can apply for a job at Optus Stadium and kind of be at the stadium. You might not see any of the game, but you'll
be
there to
it.
Experience it. Well, you might be, you know, flipping burgers or whatever. Yeah. They need chefs. They need attendants.
And surely they'll be doing stuff in that precinct, right? Like obviously the Camfield will be having a massive show. That'll be probably your next best thing. But you'd think that the AFL or Optus Stadium or the state government would be doing something, you know, around that area for people who don't have tickets if they want to wander over Matagorda Bridge and be a part of it somehow.
Well, and just wait outside.
Yeah, just hang around outside.
Like on a rock.
Yeah, big screen. Put up a big screen.
Well, you could do that. Put up a big screen. Yeah. They do that often at these big events. I mean, alternatively, you can just sit at home and watch on your TV.
Yeah,
you know,
live have a big party.
Live and free.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. On Channel 7.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
I'm letting you do the plug.
Classy. Yeah. And now let's cross to this. This is really sad news down in Pemberton. Tony Ditree went missing. How long ago was it now?
About
3 weeks ago. Yeah. And a local farmer, has been charged over his disappearance. And what is the latest news?
Well, his remains, his body was found by accident by a member of the public. The remains were discovered on a rural property near Pemberton by this member of the public in a shallow grave, we're told. As you've said, there is a farmer who has been charged with murder. And so the area where this body was found was at the long end of a long dirt road, we're told, and detectives had been digging in that area after this shallow grave was discovered. So the investigation now will progress ahead of it going to court. There's obviously a search for answers underway now, but now they obviously have somebody who's charged, they have a body, and they're piecing that investigation together.
Yeah, well, it's a big day for the police down there, and also a bit of closure for the family, which
very
is the most
well-known
important
bloke
thing.
Down there as well.
Yeah, beloved bloke down there, member of the community. And now let's talk vax figures. How are we looking today?
Today, almost 2,110,000 doses administered. Almost 853,000 of us are fully vaccinated.
Oh, so we've cracked 850.
853. Do we need to say
What else you got? You got anything?
Woohoo! Have that ready again. No, that's warranted. Doing it by 50,000 increments now?
Yeah,
I'm happy to do that.
Okay.
It's like a really cheap auction for a fundraiser now. 38.6% of the WA population 12 and over.
Mm.
And we'll go to the 16 and over. You might need your sound effect. 41% of the population.
No,
we're not
we only cracked 40% yesterday.
Yeah, but we've now got to 41.
No, you can't have it every
1%. Can't
you have it every 1%? The next time you get a woohoo
Why can't we have a celebration every time?
The over 12.
Why are you the fun police.
Hang on, you don't know what's coming up. I've got a surprise for you a little bit later in this segment. But so we'll save the woohoo.
Ten hooks now.
We'll save the woohoo for when we crack 40% of the 12 and overs.
Fair enough. Okay, 40% 12
and overs. Talk,
that's going to be a couple of weeks away.
Mel, my producer,
keep
has got
shampers on ice,
like an
people.
Itchy trigger finger here on this sound effect. Just hold on, Mel. Hang on. It's not time yet. But now we've got some news about the quokka is getting a special day.
It's quokka birthday.
Is that a real thing?
Well, it's not a real thing, but it was an initiative to get people to Rottnest Island where the weather's terrible like it is at the moment. You know, it's not always terrible in September, but it's a celebratory month for the quokka, which is, you know, the happiest animal on the planet we know.
Is this the first time it's ever happened?
No, it's happened. Before.
It's happened before. And now, have you got, don't throw them
old
out there
news
just yet.
Reheated.
And don't throw them out there just yet, but do you have any ideas for how we could make the quokka birthday something, you know, sort of globally significant?
Oh, a massive, a big quokka.
Okay, here we go.
Why is there not a big quokka?
So don't throw your ideas out yet. We've got to play, we've got to think. Because as you know, of course, we are the self-titled fizz twins. like Eddie Maguire, we bring the fizz wherever we go. And now I think we have earned our own sting.
The Fizz Twins.
That is very good. You know what we needed? The hail sound effect. At the end.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll add that.
We'll add that ourselves. And so, okay, so, let's
when do we play that? When we're getting
when we've got some ideas.
Okay.
When we're adding the fizz.
The big
so
quokka. Remember how
we
were going to have the big Statue of Liberty in the Swan River? That never happened. We were going to have the big Dubai thing in the Swan River. That never happened. We got a little key, so we're happy with that. I think we need a big quokka.
Giant quokka, yes.
Giant quokka. Yes. Why is there not a giant quokka on Roddo
That's
already?
That's a great question. Like, we've got giant prawns, we've got giant ram in Wagen, we've got giant things. A giant orange in Tamworth?
Yeah.
Or, no, not Tamworth. It's Goulburn, maybe. I don't know where it is. It wasn't that impressive.
We've got a dwarf
it's just
bell
a big
tower
orange ball.
Now.
Yeah. So that's why we need a giant quokka. I think that
what
is actually
genius. What do you think?
Genius.
Anything else?
No, that's
Has
all
anyone
we
ever suggested that? Well, that just came to me today, courtesy of the sleep deprivation of this week.
No, I like it. I like a giant quokka. People would go and see a giant quokka. It'd be easier to get a. Can you imagine your selfie? If you had a selfie with a small quokka and then the giant quokka towering over you.
I love it. I love it. Also, there's a real incentive to head over there for the weekend if you have children who are 12 and under, because obviously they can't get jabbed, but they can go to Roddo for free for the month of September.
That's
for the same
good.
Day trip.
Let's just see what the weather's going to look like this weekend.
No, don't do that.
Not amazing.
Not amazing.
It's not going to rain. And Sunday, partly cloudy and 19 for the quokka's birthday.
Oh, there you go.
So there you go. I love it.
Not too bad.
I love it. I think
there's
let's
lots
build
of,
it up.
Family-friendly activities there. I think they've got like DJs and they've got... If you're there staying there on the Saturday night, they're going to have a bonfire and twilight tours. And this time of year, the baby quokkas start coming out.
Wow, that's cool. I've never seen a baby.
Haven't you seen a baby?
I think I've seen one in their little pouch.
Very cute.
And look, a quokka's birthday means more to me than the Queen's birthday, if I'm being honest. I don't care about that. So I think I'm all for it. So that's wonderful. Maddie, thank you so much for your hard work this week on The West Live. We'll talk to you on Monday.
Will do. Have a great weekend, mate.
You're listening to The West Live.
He's a man that when you see him needs no introduction. His trademark blue shirt and shorts and iconic eyebrows make him one of the most recognisable people in Western Australia. Of course, I'm talking about the Spud King himself, Tony Gallardi. But WA's most recognisable man might become unrecognisable when he does something drastic. But it's all for a good cause and it all relies on how generous West Aussies are. Joining me now to tell us exactly what this drastic measure is the man himself. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Oh, fantastic, mate. So what are you planning to do?
Well, this year, telethon's coming around again the next month, and we're trying to do a little bit more than what we normally do every year, and I put the eyebrows on the line. If we raise $500,000, I will harvest these brows.
Wow. You're going to harvest them. You need a header or something like that? You need some pretty serious equipment.
I think we'll find a hedger somewhere.
And now, the Spudjet has always been a fantastic supporter of Telethon, and you have yourself raised a lot of money over the years. What made you decide to put the eyebrows on the line?
Well, this year, you know, with our team, we're looking at raising $500,000 for Telethon, and I thought, well, hang on, if we get the target, I will crop these brows. And, you know, it's a good cause, and, you know, I'm really grateful that my kids and my grandkids are all healthy, and a lot of our friends are, And after the misfortune that the kids that are sick, we have to help and pitch in.
Yeah, hear, hear. Are you worried they might not grow back?
Oh, I think they'll grow back. Put the right fertiliser on, I think they'll grow back.
And so how can people support this fundraising drive, help you raise this $500,000?
Well, you can online, you can donate, or if you come to our spudgeds, we got a roundup. So if you spend, you know, every little cent helps, you know what I mean? If you spend $10.50, you want to round up the next dollar, you can put 50 cents, or if it's, you know, $5.70, you want it to round up to the dollar, it could be 30 cents, whatever. And you can donate whatever you can. And if we get the number this year, I'll take the eyebrows off.
Mm. And have you thought about where you're going to go to get the eyebrows removed? Are you going to do it very publicly so we can all watch?
I think we are, yes.
potentially on telethon?
Potentially, yes.
Oh, wow. That's pretty exciting. I know we normally see the celebrities taking their shirts off, but I think you taking your eyebrows off is going to be the absolute highlight. last year, the fundraiser managed to break a record, even despite a global pandemic happening, which just goes to show how much telethon means to West Aussies. What does it mean to you?
No, WA is unbelievable. You know, what we do, and we virtually roll up our sleeves and we dig deep and we do our best. And like I said, we're really grateful to live in a beautiful state. I reckon it's the best state in the world. And let's see what we can do.
Yep, absolutely. Let's all chip in and see what we can do. Everybody get down to Spud Shed and let's see if we can get those eyebrows off your face. Tony Gilardi, thanks for joining me on The West Live.
Thank you for having us, eh? Really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been 150 years in the making to get the grand final here, and I reckon take the week off and just have lunch, just go your hardest.
That was AFL boss Gil McLachlan talking yesterday about Perth's historic grand final. Joining me now is a man who's won a few grand finals himself, a two-time premiership player and a premiership coach, West Coast legend John Worsfold. Good morning, Woosha.
Good morning. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. So what do you reckon? Is Gil right? Everyone in Perth should take the week off and just go their hardest next week?
Yeah, I don't know about taking the whole week off, but they should. I think there's different ways to celebrate throughout the whole week. You know, I'm not sure what the training schedule will be for the participating teams, but, you know, quite often that's a big event. I remember when we played in grand finals, a lot of people would like to come and watch one of the training sessions and support that way. So we've got both clubs training in town. You know, there's plenty of events that are going to be on and around. So everyone should just join in and make it a great week.
Yeah, and so even with the arrival of Optus Stadium, you know, one of the great stadiums in Australia, did you ever think that you'd see a grand final here in WA?
No, obviously that was not even a remote consideration. You know, the grand finals at the MCG, we know that, although, you know, I did play in one at Waverley Park when the MCG was getting redeveloped. So I suppose that when we show them how well we do it next week, and they need to redevelop the MCG in 5 or 10 years' time, they'll know they can easily ship it over here again.
And so you've been through enough grand finals now to know exactly what the teams can expect. So as they're getting ready for this week before the big game, they're both away from home, both over here on this side of the country. What do you think is going to be the key to their preparation for the Demons and for the Bulldogs?
Yeah, really it is. They're trying to get the balance right of still training well and being, you know, physically and mentally really well prepared for the day. So the challenges of having a week off in between the prelim final and the grand final is a bit unique. So again, both teams are going through it, so there's not an advantage for one or the other. And we've already heard a little bit about how they're treating their big training session this week a little bit differently. One's being a bit more risk mitigation, and the other ones are saying they're going pretty hard at match play to keep themselves in top nick for the game. So, yeah, there are some subtle differences. You know, players don't have their usual routine about taking their dog for a walk or heading down to the local cafe in any downtime they have. So the clubs will also be trying to make sure that there's good options for players to get out of their hotels, do something which is not energy sapping, but also, you know, takes their mind off the build-up to the game at different periods.
Because that's the thing, right? Like, we know that coaches speak about the dangers of players playing the game in their head a little bit too much before the big game. Is that a bit of a risk factor here because they don't have their normal, you know, sort of outlets to get their minds off it, whether it's family, friends, this, you know, just their general life?
Yeah, no, it is a little bit more of a risk, no doubt, because, as I said, if they're living in their home state, in their own home, they would have little escapes that they enjoy, and they know it's their way to just get away from thinking about the footy day-to-day. So, yeah, whether that's going and having a meal with mum and dad, whether it's catching up with a couple of mates for a light game of golf or things like that, they haven't really got those options over here. So, you know, if they go and play golf, they're probably playing golf with their teammates, which, again, just keeps them in that mindset that it's still footy. And pretty much all their meals, I would imagine, are all together. So, they'll be dealing with that and working their way through it. But it is one of those things that you try to weigh up. How can we put things in place so the players do have that downtime, that escape time, but when they come to training, they switch back into, you know, fully professional mode and get ready to go.
And the game sold out. The 10,000 general admission tickets for West Aussie sold out in 9 minutes, I think. Were you surprised at all to see how quickly they were snapped up?
No, not at all. I mean, I don't think I spoke to anyone who wasn't going online early to try and get a ticket. So, if you go around the percentage of people that I crossed paths with and were planning on trying to get tickets, I'm surprised that it took 9 minutes. That was obviously the capacity of the system.
That's right. And now you don't have to worry about scoring a ticket because you'll be there in an official capacity. You've been a previous recipient of the Jock McHale Medal in the past, which is awarded to the Premiership coach each year. How does it feel to be presenting that award this year?
Oh, no, it's nice. Having been a Premiership coach, I know how special it is. And Luke Beveridge, if the Bulldogs win, he's already won one. But if Simon Goodwin wins, it'll be his first Premiership as a coach. So either way, you know, I'll really look forward to presenting it to guys, just knowing how proud they'll be at that moment to have taken their team all the way. Just to be out on the field for a few minutes post-game, you know, in a capacity that you're not actually involved will be really nice. I've obviously been out there as a losing player and coach and also a winning player and coach, but I've never been out there just to sort of soak up the feeling because I'll be neutral, so I'll be pretty close by the losing team as well as the winning team, and it'll just be nice to be a small part of it.
Now, you're officially neutral, you say, Woosha, but do you have any kind of emotional attachment to one team or the other, or who's your pick for the GF?
Yeah, it's a good question. Look, Ash Hansen is one of the players that played in our 2006 Premiership, and, you know, really wonderful young man that I've had a lot to do with. He's coaching with the Western Bulldogs. So that's about the tightest link I've got to either side. Although, you know, Angus Brayshaw, you know, I know Mark Brayshaw pretty well. I worked with him at the AFL Coaches Association for a little while. So you tend to, because I've been around for so long in the game, I know a lot of people on across the industry. So really, I don't have any strong affiliation at all. I just want them all to play well and put on a great show for us. But if you ask me to say which team do I think has the advantage, I think Melbourne playing their best footy may be too strong.
Mm. And what about for the Brownlow on Sunday, which of course is another great once-in-a-lifetime thing that is happening in Perth as part of this festival of footy. Who do you like for that award?
I really only go with the people who have followed it so closely throughout the year. But Clayton Oliver and Christian Petrarca both have had great years. Potentially they bump a few votes off each other. But I also think that Bontempelli and McRae may steal some votes. But I'm going to suggest Jack McRae for me.
There's a good one. It's definitely a close field, that's for sure. Quite a few blokes there in that top echelon who could all have a red-hot crack. And now, turning to your old club, West Coast, how about that Nick Nat, hey, taking out the John Worsfold medal 2 years in a row?
Yeah, it's remarkable. You know, the big fella had, obviously, two knee reconstructions in the middle of his career, and to bounce back from those as such a big guy and go on and dominate the game as he has in the last couple of years is a real credit to him and the work he put in to get himself back. You know, everyone was so shattered when he did that first knee, thinking, oh, will he ever get back to his best? And, you know, he's certainly shown that. So, you know, he's a wonderful young man, a super young footballer and very, you know, dedicated to his craft. And, you know, it was an honour to see him win that medal the other night.
Yeah, one of the few bright spots for the Eagles this year, unfortunately. And now, Wisha, before we let you go, we heard Gil McLaughlin's advice for the people of Perth in getting around the grand final. What's your advice as someone who's been there and done that?
I think just lapping up the excitement of it all. You know, it is such a big day, and it's obviously the first one ever in Western Australia, and maybe the only one ever. Yeah, and I know how proud people are and confident that it is going to be an awesome event. So the more people talk about it, you know, get some little competitions going, pick the winner in the margin, pick the first goal kicker, get some little competitions going amongst your mates and enjoy the whole build-up.
Yep, let's put on a show that everyone will remember. Two-time Premiership player and Premiership coach and West Coast legend John Worsfold, thanks for your time on The West Live.
Thanks very much, Ben.
At midnight tonight, a mandatory vaccination policy for aged care workers comes into force in WA. There are concerns this could spark job losses and resignations in a sector already plagued by staff shortages. But in WA, there is one facility that's proving mandatory vaccinations can work and work without animosity. Swan Care in Bentley has a vaccination rate of 99% among its staff. So what can we learn from them? Joining me now is Swan Care's CEO, Graham Francis. Good morning, Graham.
Good morning, Ben. Thank you for having me.
And so, how have you managed to get 99% of your staff vaccinated without any resignations?
Look, it wasn't an easy task, and I know in your intro you made it sound pretty easy, but a lot of collaboration, a lot of working communication with the staff first up, but we had a really good working relationship with the WA Health Department as well, and we... Through their connections, we were able to have on-site clinics at Bentley. We've got four on-site nursing homes in Bentley, something like 600 employees. And with the help of the health department, we found it easier if we actually brought the COVID vaccination clinics on-site to work, and that really helped with the vaccination rate. And, yeah, that helped us push through. I actually checked the figures last night. We're sitting just a bit below 99%. We're around 98%.
Oh, so only 98?
I counted that last night because I wanted to make sure. We've got about 15 staff of the 600 that are still unvaccinated. So there's a couple of people that, for a variety of reasons, haven't been able to get the jab. But that's not going to cause any problems with managing shift losses and things like that. So we're able to cover with the employment that we have, with the numbers we have. So, yeah, look, it's all good. But as I say, we wouldn't have got it done without the help of the health department and the on-site clinics, which I think was something that was not just unique to Swan Care, but other organisations also were able to tap into that. But it certainly made things easier. Mm. The other thing too, Ben, anecdotal more than anything else, but the increased communication and accessibility to Pfizer also made a huge difference as the process went on. There was probably some hesitation early about AstraZeneca for some of our staff, but when the Pfizer accessibility opened up, that also increased the rate. So yeah, now look, our staff are very passionate. You know, they know that by them getting vaccinated helps to not only protect themselves, but more importantly, provides a better environment and helps to protect the residents that they care for. So it really wasn't an issue, and I would say that would be pretty typical for most aged care workers in the sense that they are very compassionate and are very focused on caring for the residents. So having a vaccination jab to provide a better and safer environment is not really too much of an issue.
Mm. And so just to try and take some more away from your experience, because there are a lot of companies at the moment who are talking about introducing mandatory vaccination, and they're not being forced to, like your industry. But I'm curious to know, in those early days after this legislation was proposed and passed, that it would become compulsory for people in working in the aged care sector, what were your staff who were reluctant to get the vaccine initially saying to you? And what were they worried about, and how did you go about easing those worries?
Yeah, look, a good question. Look, aged care staff in general are quite used to getting vaccinations. We have to have a flu jab. To work in an aged care facility, you have to have a flu vaccination, and that's been in place for quite some time. You know, and that's compulsory for not only staff but also residents. So if you want to go to an aged care facility, you have to have a flu jab. So it wasn't an over-the-top impost, if you know what I mean, in terms of applying another need to have a vaccination. I can certainly understand and empathise with people that don't want to be vaccinated, and that's their choice. And we've got some staff that who have got some inherent health issues and are seeking exemptions from vaccination, and that's fine, and we'll work around that. But look, we didn't have any immediate knockback, Ben, I have to say, from the requirement, because it's kind of ingrained in what aged care workers do.
In the paper today, in a story about this topic, the United Workers Union aged care director said that even just a drop-off of 6% of staff, if they didn't want to get the jab, could push the sector into crisis. Just how is the staffing situation going in your industry? And do you foresee that being a problem? Or do you think that most aged care facilities will be like yours and, as you say, on compassionate grounds and being used to of getting vaccination as part of the job, will go along with this legislation and there won't be this drop-off of staff?
I don't think there'll be, well, from our experience, there won't be an immediate drop-off in staff because of the imposition of the vaccinations. But having said that, acquiring and recruiting staff in aged care generally is a huge challenge for the sector. And we're not immune from this. So whilst we have good vaccination rates and solid staff numbers at the moment, it's a very, very volatile industry. People are moving out of it and in quite frequently. And getting staff and getting the right staff is a challenge, and there's no doubt about it. I can concur with what the unions are saying, that there is pressure on staffing anyway. So a small drop-off due to having the requirement to be vaccinated will cause a problem, but the problem existed before this vaccination imposition was put on the industry. Just getting staff is a challenge, something that we're working hard on. I know other providers and my peers are also doing the same thing, and we've got some options happening to recruit, but it is a challenge for the sector, there's no doubt about it.
Mm. And so back to vaccination and it being applied across other industries, do you have any advice for those companies that are thinking about bringing in mandatory vaccination and what they can do, I guess, to bring employees along in a way that is compassionate and gets results?
Yeah, that is another good question. Look, it goes back to communication. I would advise any of the organisations that are proposing it, and it has to be around workplace safety, providing a safe environment for your workers, particularly with a lot of interaction with the community. It's communication. I would advise, listen to the facts, probably not social media so much. Getting the vaccination is the best way for us to get an overall protection. And, I do understand why people don't want it, but I can't see the sense in not having it if it's going to provide a safer environment for us all in a workplace.
Yep, I think that is 100% right. Swancare CEO Graham Francis, thanks for joining us on The West Live.
Thanks, Ben. Thank you.
With our focus on COVID-19, you might not have noticed that the flu has virtually disappeared. But that seems to be the case. Before COVID-19 arrived, the number of influenza cases was reaching some of its highest levels, with more than 300,000 cases of the flu across Australia in 2019, 2.7 times higher than the five-year average, and 953 deaths. This year, to August 29, just 484 cases were recorded and zero deaths. Joining me now to unpack why this might not be as good news as it first seems is Dr. Kirsty Short from the University of Queensland. Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning.
So it may seem obvious, but why have we seen such low numbers of the flu?
Yeah, so the most likely reason for this is the combination of sort of social distancing and hygiene measures that we've used for COVID-19 that have been very effective against the flu virus, but also the closure of our international borders has meant that we're not getting any new flu strains coming in from, say, the Northern Hemisphere. So those factors combined really mean that there's a very, very low level of flu going around at the moment.
And is that a good thing?
Look, it is in that, you know, nobody wants to get the flu and people die from the flu every year. So that's very good in one sense. It does put us in an interesting situation as to what's going to happen in the future, because we're not really sure. We're not really sure what this is going to mean once we start to open up, and particularly start to open our international borders and start to relax some of the social distancing measures. We're not sure if flu is going to come back with a vengeance or if we'll just have normal flu seasons that we've seen in past winters.
And so is there any idea of why 2019 was such a bad year for the flu?
Yeah, look, you'll have some years that are severe years for the flu and some years that are mild years. In particular, we had a very bad year in 2017. Other years, you know, it fluctuates. So we do get seasonal fluctuation, and that's season to season fluctuation, and that's normal.
Yeah, right. And so in a case where there is a lot of flu going around, does that make a difference in terms of, like, I guess, our immunity, how we build up a resistance to these sort of viruses? And then when there is no flu, do we lose a bit of that resistance?
This is one of the things we don't know. So we don't know if this lack of exposure to flu means that our immunity to flu will wane somewhat, or maybe that won't be a problem at all, provided that people have still been getting vaccinated. So it's sort of a watch and wait situation.
Yeah, right. And so what can we do, I guess, to learn more about this situation?
Where we're going to learn the most information, I think, will be in the Northern Hemisphere's upcoming winter, because there you have a situation with COVID restrictions relaxed. You have largely international travel resumed. So it will be very important to study the incidence of influenza there and really get an understanding of what might happen in our next flu season.
Yeah, right. Because what is happening over there at the moment? Are they seeing a similar sort of reduction to influenza that we've seen here in Australia?
This reduction to influenza has been global, and, you know, whilst flu is not completely eliminated, we're seeing a dramatic drop with that rise in COVID-19 restrictions and restrictions on international travel. So it will really be trying to learn from other countries and as they go through their winter season what we should expect here in Australia.
Yeah, to be honest, I'm amazed that flu is down in Australia, because in my personal experience, it seems that we've had a bad flu season over here in Perth, and people have completely forgotten the lessons of social distancing and hand sanitising and everything. But I guess, you know, the people say that when it comes to the COVID-19 pandemic, that one day it'll be like the flu going around in our society. Is that how you see it?
I think what we can expect is that we will have COVID-19 going around in our society, because we can't eliminate it, certainly not at this stage. What we really need to focus on is, at some point, we will stop focusing on the rates of COVID-19 and just focus on the fact that because the majority of the population is vaccinated, it's not really a serious illness anymore.
Yeah, right. So, and is that kind of the way we look at influenza at the moment, right? We don't really talk about how many people catch the flu. We talk about how many people are potentially hospitalised or lose their lives.
Correct. And that's why we have such a strong push every year for the flu vaccine, because just like with COVID-19, it's the best protection we have against severe disease.
And you've been given a grant to work on a project to develop treatments and to respond to future pandemics. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, look, this is part of our broader work on pandemic preparedness. And the reality of the situation is that the next viral pandemic, and there will be another viral pandemic, unfortunately, we don't know if it's going to be caused by a flu virus, by a coronavirus, or another yet virus that maybe we haven't even discovered. So what we want to do now is develop diagnostics and therapies that can be used across multiple different viruses. So we can stockpile them now, and that way, no matter what virus spills over into the human population, we have some sort of diagnostic and therapy on hand available for patients.
Yeah, well, I guess there's still so much left to know, and the future is certainly unwritten. Virologist Dr. Kirsty Short from the University of Queensland, thanks for joining us on The West Live today.
Thank you.
And now we have the latest COVID figures in from the East Coast. In Victoria, another day over 500 cases, 510 new locally acquired cases, and sadly, one person with COVID-19 has died. In New South Wales, they have recorded 1,284 new locally acquired cases of COVID-19 in the 24 hours to 8 p.m. last night, and a further 12 people have lost their lives to COVID in that state, 6 men, 6 women. There are currently 1,245 COVID cases in hospital in New South Wales, with 228 people in the ICU and 112 of them currently on ventilators.
Fearless Friday with Jeff Parry.
Joining me now in the studio on Friday, as is his wont, is Channel 7 senior reporter Jeff Parry. G'day, mate.
Hello, mate. What a big week it's been. We've had Mark McGowan nuking the upper house voting system, and now in the next 10 or so years, we're going to have nuclear submarines parked off our doorstep.
Yeah, exactly. It's a massive, massive change in the power structure of the region.
Sure is.
Both out of the West Australian region and the Indo-Pacific region. Let's start with the West Australian region and these proposed changes to the upper house. For people who came in late, explain to us what's going on.
Well, they're now making it that we will be voting in the upper house, which is where this whole push is really. Whereas we used to have 6 regions, 3 of those metro, 3 of those regional, they're being scrapped so that we will all vote now on a single whole of state electorate. So if you think of the Senate, where, you know, you're voting for a party, a Liberal Party, National Party, ALP, once they get a quota, they get a member in. Next quota, they get a member in. And that's pretty much how it's going to work on the voting system. But it does away with that sort of weighting towards regional voters who, you know, for forever and a day have had that sort of that special position where their vote has been worth more than a city vote.
Which has been, I guess, very useful to the Country Party, the Nationals, and it's helped the Liberals as well.
It certainly has, yes.
And it's really prevented Labor from getting a majority in the past of both houses. They did this time around, and they're using it to now push through these changes to the upper house. And so going forward, let's be clear, there's nothing that anybody can do about it, really, is there?
No, that's the unsurprising thing.
They've got a super majority. Both houses under Mark McGowan's control. So going forward, with these changes, you could find that now there's potentially an unlimited amount of Labor upper house members.
Well, it certainly works in the favour of the party that gets most votes, at any particular election. Now, Labor until now, and it's been in extraordinary circumstances leading up to the last election, they've managed to get control for the first time of the upper house. So it's no surprise that they're doing this. It's not a surprise. I mean, you know, there's arguments about whether McGowan was honest about it or not, but, you know, at the time he didn't know, I'm assuming that he couldn't know that he would win such a massive majority and get control of the upper house for the first time. So I don't think anyone's really surprised that he's bringing this in. But, you know, the National Party, well, the Liberals and National Parties, and occasionally, you know, they had to govern with you know, crossbench support. They've had, you know, balance of power, but largely it's been the province of the Liberals and you know, with the support of the Nats to be, you know, a house of obstruction, if you like, when there's been a Labor government in the lower house, or it's allowed them, when they've had majority in the lower house, to sort of sail their, you know, legislative program through. So this is Labor now levelling the field, if you like, and saying, well, it's an undemocratic system in the upper house. We're going to level the playing field. And that's exactly what they're doing.
And so, but what do you think it does mean for democracy in WA? Because it's all well and good for the Labor Party right now. But, you know, there could come a time in maybe 100 years when the Liberal Party in WA has relevance again. And then they could have a supermajority. If they become so popular, you win the lower house, win more seats in the upper house. So could you just get a situation where it just oscillates from one party having total control to another party having total control?
Well, that's the thing that's, I mean, the changes are actually an improvement on, you know, on democracy. One vote, one value is a better system than someone having more votes than someone mm-hmm. else. Now, in the past, Labor has never had control of the upper house, but the Liberals and the National Parties have, and that's been the system that's always, you know, by the way it was set up, prevented Labor being able to to put forward its legislative plan. They've been voted for, that, you know, the majority of people to say, yes, we want Labor and we want the policies that you espouse. They can't always get them through the upper house because they've been blocked. Now, you know, the what Liberals and Nationals, of course, say, well, is this is a house of review. But it's also a house of obstruction, if you know, in terms of Labor being, you know, in the majority party. So, does that mean that now that those changes have come into effect, that we could do away with the upper house? Well, Queensland's done without one, you know, quite easily. But you know, that's probably very unlikely. But at least at the very least, in this case, Labor will say that, you know, we're able to put our legislative program through. We're not obstructed by the you know, the weighting of votes in the upper house, and this is the way that it should be. Now, you know, Mr. McGowan was obtuse when he was asked several times.
He was asked several times before the state election about this.
And because a journo, as one of several journos, or, you know, a dozen journos who were there at these press conferences, no one thought, you know, that this wouldn't happen. If they got...
Well, I think this is not a priority for my government.
And he couldn't foresee that he would be in the position to do it. But, you know, he certainly seized the moment, and he will cement himself in Labor Party folklore as the man who delivered, you know, one vote, one value, and gave them the opportunity to have, you know, the power in both houses of parliament.
And what does it mean for people in the bush?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, the fact that I'm sure they don't go sort of walking down, you know, the main street of the only street in a small country town and saying, I've got six votes. I'm sure they don't think about that at all.
Don't spend too much time thinking about it.
And they're losing something. They, you know, they're losing that advantage that, you know, or this perceived advantage that they've got a say, you know, in rural issues. I mean, that sort of really comes down, I guess, to the parties. The National Party is going to be stuffed. But, you know, for the Liberal and Labor, you know, how many people... They're going to put up a raft of people to stand for, you know, for election, and it's up to them to, you know, choose people who represent the regions, and who live out in the regions. You know, that's all sort of part of what they're going to have to do. But I mean, the rural people are certainly losing an advantage, but that advantage, you know, supposedly to the disadvantage of people in metro areas who only have the one vote. I mean, if one vote, one value is a fairly well established concept, and they don't have it in Western Australia in the upper house, and they soon will.
Yep, soon will, for sure. And now let's talk about the nuclear subs. It's really, everybody's talking about it. Joe Biden's talking about it. He couldn't remember Scott Morrison's name. Do you reckon he did actually have that brain fade there?
Yeah, I think he had a brain fade.
Yeah, I reckon.
Yeah. There are some there are some people who are kinder than we are, Ben, who suggested that he was you know, joshing, having a little joke. But no, I think he had a brain fade.
Yeah, well, you know, when you get to that age. Mm. But Beijing have now come out. And what did you make of their response?
Oh, probably typical.
Yeah.
You know, they don't like us. They're posturing. The interesting thing is, though, if they punish us again, you know, by
what's
taking,
left to take away?
Correct. Well, but whatever they take away, America seems to pick up. They got our barley contracts. You know, that they seem to sort of just, you know, in the trade sense, they just move in and replace us. So it's an advantage to them. But that aside, you know, I think most people would think this is this just makes sense. The last submarine contract, the one with the French, was an absolute schmozzle.
Mm.
Not necessarily all the French's fault, but also, you know, defence is a basket case.
What were they going to be, croissant powered?
Oh, you know, it just. But I think this makes sense. I think, you know, I can remember the protests back in the 70s, in the 80s, when the Americans used to come here from, you know, for R&R, the Pacific Fleet would come down and, you know, half a dozen ships would pull in, including an aircraft carrier, and 10,000, you know, sailors would get off, for their R&R. And they used to love it because they'd bring all, you know, US dollars. And but there were a lot of them, hardcore sort of anti-nuke protesters who said, you know, we don't want you here. And they would protest in numbers. There's still sort of certainly an anti, you know, the people here would think that we, you know, will still be a target, and we will.
I don't think you can't say we won't be.
It's just what you want to, you know. I mean, what are you prepared to accept these days? The 70s and the 80s, we're now in the 21s, you know. So it's a different time.
Yeah, it is a different time. And, you know, once upon a time, we would have looked at Chinese rhetoric today where they said, you know, now because of this, you know, sort of Australia's soldiers will be the first Western soldiers to waste their lives in the South China Sea. And you'd look at that and go, geez, that's a bit over the top. But then you remember our politicians are the ones talking about the drums of war.
Well, you know, China's certainly muscling up and they're militarising. There's no doubt about that. I mean, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, you'd look at them and say, gee, they've got a lot of people. They're probably, you know, they were weak militarily because they couldn't project themselves out, you know, beyond China, and now they are, you know, building a chain of islands through the South China Sea, and they've got, you know, hundreds of ships now. They've got two aircraft carriers. They're building another couple. They're still about 18 behind the US, so there's a long way to go. But they're muscling up, and they're. You know, they want to be major players in the world. They'll probably in the next few years economically overtake the US.
Mm.
So they can't be sneered at.
No, definitely not. You sneer at them at your own peril, that's for sure.
As our farmers and producers have found out.
Exactly. So, yeah, we'll wait and see where this story with the subs go. There's plenty more to be talked about, that's for sure. And now plenty more to be talked about the grand final as well. It's all anybody's going to be talking about next week. So if you're a politician and you've got some news that you don't really want to be dissected publicly, I reckon next week is a great time to do it. So Roger Cook, if you're listening, you got a few health department things you want to sneak under the radar. Yeah, next week with the grand final on the way, it's probably the time to do it.
Yeah, and you've got to admire those hardcore people who go and sort of sleep out at the box office, and, you know, you haven't seen that for a little while.
Are you going to be working on the day for Channel 7?
Not on the Saturday. I will be on the Sunday. So I'll
what are you doing for grand final?
I don't know yet. But I am going to barrack for the Bulldogs.
Oh, yeah?
Because Footscray, which was the predecessor to the Bulldogs, used to be my VFL team when I'm a Subi man here in the Waffle, but, you know, I had a Victorian team and that was the Bulldogs. So,
well, it suits your sting for the West Live.
Yeah.
So there you go.
I'm going to stick with them.
Now, are you going to hang around for the West for the Wild West?
Love to, mate.
The Wild West. Joining us now in the studio is the West Online's Kate Phillips. G'day, Kate.
How are you?
I'm doing good.
Good.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And now let's talk straight about the Duke of Edinburgh, who's dropped off the twig.
What's that? Yes.
I lose track of which royal is which.
I think it's a tweet, not twig.
No, twig. Yeah, he dropped off the twig, the old Duke of Prince Philip.
Yep.
And so, but his will, who's he leaving to who? is remaining a secret.
That's right. So they're not going to tell anybody. It's going to be kept private amongst everyone for 90 years. So, yes.
Oh, wow.
I know.
For 90 years?
For 90 years. I think it's from the main concern that, you know, they don't want people knowing. It could cause distress for the Queen. So they're going to keep it under wraps.
So if he's cut Meghan and Harry out, that... We won't know about that.
Ah, yeah.
No, exactly.
That'd be the main thing, right? That'd be the main talking point, because what else would he have to leave behind? Probably a few, like, semi-racist artifacts that he's picked up around the world.
Well, that's so... The thing is, right, I think part of their argument is to stop the conjecture. You know, there's going to be too much focus on it. But I think by not releasing it, there's going to be just as much conjecture. So,
what does he own, though? He'd be a kept man, wouldn't he, Kate?
Yeah, well,
I'm not really sure. Well, I mean, apart from the obvious, like a castle and lots of rich people things, I'm not really sure. Yeah.
From his own family line, he must have inherited some stuff.
I thought they were busted ass. I mean, there were sort of some impoverished Greek sort of remote royalty, weren't they?
And I think they were, yeah.
And he was sort of adopted by the Mountbattens and sort of he's, you know, lived this like, you know, have this sort of existence.
Yep, and then he's moved on up.
Lived off his wife for
years. You might have like a small olive grove outside of Athens or something like that.
Yeah, maybe they gave him something to feel good about himself. But
was there a car? Didn't he have a car?
He rang someone down in the car.
Yeah, yeah. He did. Was it the car, though? I'm not sure. But that would have been a lot of options.
That'd be a rangy, wouldn't it?
Yeah, especially modified Land Rover, I think, that carried his coffin. And so there's that. Probably slightly haunted.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd want to buy it.
And now let's cross from that to Perth, where there are suburbs that are killing it even more than we expect in this superheated property market.
That's right. So the 10 richest suburbs have been revealed. Yeah. I don't know that there are any surprises
Richest by person, by resident.
Well, it's the most expensive, so richest. Oh, yeah. Look at me, I'm getting caught up on the royals here. So, yeah, the most expensive suburbs. Where even in a lotto win couldn't get you a home, pretty much.
Well, we'll run through them. What do we got?
Okay, so, again, I don't know if there's any surprises. Dalkeith, Peppermint Grove, Cottesloe, City Beach, Nedlands, Claremont, Swanbourne, Floreat, Mosman Park, and Applecross.
Wow. No, not really any surprises there.
Well, look, bloke's got to have his castle somewhere.
This is true. I wish my castle was there. That would make me happy.
Is there any suburb there that you're surprised, Jeff, is not on the list? It's all the major ones, right?
I think it's just all reflects the western suburbs, doesn't it?
It does.
Was Applecross on there?
Applecross was number
10. So, I mean, that you know, those riverfront properties on the south of the river, absolutely.
Adderdale? Gorgeous over there. Did you say Adderdale?
No, Applecross.
Adderdale's, you know, so you can probably get a bargain compared to Applecross down in Adderdale, even Bicton, along the river.
Yeah, all beautiful. Beautiful suburbs.
And that's what's connecting them, is being close to water, obviously. Yep. But, maybe there's up-and-comers that are going to join the list next time. You never know.
Scarborough?
Well, that's getting up there. That's expensive.
Yeah. By the beach. All those developments happening down there.
Well, and that you know, the development they did on the foreshore there is fantastic. All those, then where the swimming pool is and the life.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's made a huge difference.
And if you want to get punched out, you know, on a Saturday night, that's
Scarborough.
Where you go.
Yeah. Just go during the day.
And talking about scary, I don't know if the Loch Ness Monster is scary, but it's somehow been spotted in China, which, I'm no expert in geography, but I'm pretty sure that's not that close to Loch Ness.
No. No, it's not. So it's obviously been travelling. It's probably, you know, it's the only thing that can travel during COVID, and he's made it all the way to China, apparently.
Right. And whereabouts has it been spotted?
It's been spotted in a lake, and it's been captured by a camera that's been left there, and apparently it popped up for about 6 seconds and disappeared again. Yeah.
I just hope it doesn't end up in a wet market in Wuhan.
I was going to say, it'll be dinner near Wuhan.
It'll be dinner. Grey's Anatomy. Grey's Anatomy is a show close to every West Aussie heart because we've had one of their stars, Kate Walsh, who plays Dr. Addison Steele? Who has been in Perth for the past few months. She scored a role back on Grey's Anatomy, I believe. So did you know? I saw that on her Instagram account. Yeah, yeah. But Patrick Dempsey, who's the superstar, was he McDreamy or McSteamy?
McDreamy.
McDreamy, of course he was. And what's he done?
Well, apparently he's not so McDreamy. He's there's been a lot of accusations that he's caused PTSD on set just from his terrorising staff. So no sexual assault sort of accusations or anything like that, but purely just truly awful to people, apparently.
Yeah, right. From back in the day, are we talking about?
Yeah, from back in the day. Back so there's the people day. Still dealing with the fallout. And it's all come from this new book that's been released. And they're just saying that people just couldn't cope with him. Apparently, he just didn't like the fact he had to get up and go to work every day.
Oh, my God. A temperamental, egotistical actor.
Yeah.
Who would have thought?
I know.
That's the biggest revelation since the 10 top expensive suburbs in Perth.
Yeah, right.
But it's no. So he wasn't McDreamy. He was McNightmare.
Yeah.
For everybody who worked with him. And now DFES are getting involved with the vaccination rollout. They're rolling out some ads.
They are. And they are very popular from what I've seen. The comments are pretty thirsty. So we, if you're going to, you know, try and get people to get vaccinated, this might be the way to go. So it's got a very handsome looking man standing there saying to, he has his flat white with one shot.
Can you see this, Jeffrey?
Yep. I don't know. Yeah. See?
Right. I saw these guys roll up to the last week, during the week, to roll up to the Claremont Vaccination Centre with their film crew in, you know, and they're all, you know, they had their shirts on, but they're all the Fireman's Calendar type
guys.
Yeah.
That's a group of men right there.
Mm.
But the comments are hilarious. I think it's probably worth, you know, checking out the ad just for the comments. And there are people saying they'll get a third dose, you know, if it means that if they get them down there.
I'm going to set fire to my house if you'll come and put it out.
Yeah. I think I'm sure there's a jab joke in there, but this show is far too classy to make it. And so what are you guys up to this weekend?
I haven't thought yet. Day off, so that's nice.
You're covering the Brownlow on Sunday?
Enjoy the sun. No. That would be our sports people who would do that, I think. Yeah. And we're broadcasting it, aren't we?
Yeah.
So you'll be watching it.
I'll be watching it. Yeah. Are you tip a winner?
Oh, let's see. I've been speaking to a lot of experts this week. Woosha, who did Woosha say? He said Petrarca he liked, and there was someone else he liked as well. Look, I think it's hard to go past, you know, what is like Oliver, I think.
Mm.
He's up there with the bookies. And Bont, the Bont. Who do you like?
I don't really know. I mean, you know. I'm sure the winner. I know.
You weren't prepared for any follow-up questions.
No, I'm sure the winner will be deserving.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's a group of about five of them that, in the eyes of the bookies, are all pretty close. So it's shaping up to be a close count, which I think is always good for the drama.
Yeah, absolutely. Kate, you got
I agree. The glamour and the drama is all I'm there for.
Oh, the glamour, of course. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Do they do the? What do they call it? The red carpet?
Well, they call it something. It's a different colour carpet. Yeah. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
That's probably someone texting me who's...
Just don't worry about turning your phone off or anything, Jeffrey.
I don't know if you've noticed, but it's not really my forte or Jeff's.
No.
So,
Oh, good. Yeah. It's very inspiring.
Not to pick it.
Inspiring Brownlow conversation. Well, thanks, guys, for everything apart from that Brownlow conversation. We look forward to talking to you soon in the West Live.
See you soon.
Thanks, mate.
Well, that's it from me this week. Massive thank you to my producers and everybody who helps get the show out each day. You can join me again on Monday live from 8:45 a.m. or you can download the full show or individual interviews by searching for The West Live wherever you get your podcasts.
You've been listening to The West Live with Ben O'Shea. If the story behind the story matters to you, then you can count on the west.com.au to deliver.